employee community. We want to again emphasize to everyone that the link, login, and instructions that you receive to participate on this meeting are not to be published anywhere, but only to be shared with those directly interested. Our goal is to share the power of recovery via a meeting that is safe and by its nature, very visual. We want to welcome all those here and virtually. Hi. You may reference our webcast guide for detailed instructions and information. If you would like to participate in this meeting, either by video or by phone, before the meeting begins, please use the Sign Up Genius link called Volunteer to Participate Virtually on our website, mnhowlive.org. On the same webpage, you will find a link to our meeting readings and tools. If you have not signed up, you may volunteer to take a reading or a tool, to participate in any other way in the meeting's live chat, or participate in any other way in the meeting's live chat. We do this in advance so we can keep the meeting flowing smoothly. If you need technical help, there will be multiple coaching sessions Thursdays from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time on this same meeting link. If you are unable to make this time, please send a note to mnhowlive@gmail.com. The audio portion of this meeting is being recorded. Please visit our website at mnhowlive.org to download the files. We ask that if you do need to eat during the meeting, please eat quietly in the back of the room. For those in person, please take a moment to silence or turn off your cell phones and do not connect to the room's Wi-Fi. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation, and for those who wish, join us in saying the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Amen. I assume that I am not alone this evening, but for the record, are there any other compulsive eaters at this meeting other than myself?
Yes, present. Yay.
The We Care folder will be circulating in the room for the duration of the meeting. The first time for you to list your name, telephone number, and email, and the rest for you to take names and phone numbers to call during the week. If you are joining us remotely, please use the meeting's chat function as a virtual We Care book and enter your first name, phone number, times available for phone calls, and whether or not you are currently a sponsor in the How format. We will then add you to the We Care book that is being circulated in the room. A copy of this list can be sent to you via email after the meeting. Please put your email address in the chat. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and mutual support, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from recovery to those who still suffer. Would someone please read What Is How?
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara. Welcome.
Thank you. What is How? How is a movement within Overeaters Anonymous whose basic principle is that abstinence is the only means to freedom from compulsive overeating and the beginning of a spiritual life. Where and why did How begin? How began in Phoenix in 1981 as a means of reviving a group called OA Victorious. Its meeting format is taken from Roseanne's book, I Put My Hand in Yours, and centers around the concept of service. Many of the questions used in How sponsoring stem from OA Plus and Westminster groups. The outline of service came from the OA Suffolk County, New York Sponsors Guide. And I pass.
Mm-hmm. Hello? Hello?
Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi. Yes, this is Michelle, compulsive overeater. the only requirement. Overeaters Anonymous respects the autonomy of each OA group. We do suggest, however, that any group that has requirements in addition to the suggested 12 steps and 12 traditions inform its members that these requirements are what that particular group has found effective in working the program and does not represent OA as a whole. The members in this group have found the how concept to be effective in working the OA program. The opinions expressed here this afternoon by those who share are their own and not necessarily those of OA. The Board of Trustees states, we understand the third tradition to mean that the individual ways of working one's program should not exclude any compulsive overeater from attendance and participation in OA groups anywhere or any time. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Anyone who says he or she is a member is a member. We have Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome all with open arms. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
Would someone please read the how concept?
Hi, my name is Rebecca B. I'm an Ohio compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rebecca. Welcome.
Hey, everybody. So the how concept. The Overeaters Anonymous how meetings have been formed to offer the compulsive overeater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. How groups are formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and that only absolute acceptance of the OA program will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, we accept the 9 tools of program and the 12 steps and 12 traditions as necessary for our recovery. In OA How, our daily action plan is outlined in the structured use of each of the other tools. Our meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the HOW How of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the how ideals will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. The Tuesday evening meeting also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first 3 steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive overeating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each one of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifested on this meeting. Amen. I'll pass.
Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks, Rebecca. Would someone please read reflections for the newcomer? We can't hear you, Kelly.
Hi, guys. Okay.
I can hear you.
You still can't?
We can.
Oh, okay. Hi, I'm Kelly, compulsive overeater from Southern California. Welcome to OA How. We are also a reflection to the newcomer. Welcome to OA How. We are also glad that you have decided to become a part of our fellowship. You know that the How concept is a discipline program. We believe that the discipline of weighing and measuring, of telephoning your sponsor at a particular time, of attending meetings and making phone calls, all lead to a life based on the universal discipline, which is the cord rather than discord, even with many things going on around us. Therefore, if there is a breakdown in any of these areas, the concept is threatened, as is the individual's abstinence. We have found that the discipline must remain as constant for the beginner as for the sponsor. If the sponsor shies away from this life's responsibility, the sponsor may give the newcomer's time slot to someone more committed to recovery. This is not a personal affront, but a matter of necessity. So many who think they should recover, in fact, are not ready. If the newcomer should show lack of commitment, the sponsor may then offer the newcomer assistance in finding a new sponsor. The rationale here is if the newcomer insists on picking up the food before the phone, then there is a breakdown in the level of communication between the sponsor and newcomer. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Doctor's opinion, Big Book, page XXVI, paragraph 2. If a sponsor slips, get a new one. The pitfalls of self-deception cannot be overstressed if you are to recover. Therefore, a sponsor, in all self-honesty, must release all sponsees to continue his own recovery. A sponsor cannot give what he does not experience. Finally, you must believe that we all need each other. All problems that arise can be worked on via the phone or person-to-person contact. Only positive, upbeat recovery belongs at our meetings. Finally, you must believe that a body badly burned by alcohol does not vanish overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is a powerful restorative. The Family Afterwork, Big Book, page 133, paragraph 2. Good luck. Everyone in the fellowship is praying that you find the release from the obsession so many of us have. God bless, and no matter what, keep coming back. We'll always be here for you. Pass.
Thanks, Kelly. Would someone please read an excerpt from step 2 of the OA 12 and 12?
Hi, all. This is Brenna, compulsive overeater and bulimic in Colorado.
Hi, Brenna. Welcome.
Thank you. Excerpt from step 2 of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, pages 9 through 11, starting at paragraph 2. When we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we have acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We have driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We have eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. We have eaten food off of other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We have dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. We have frequently lied about what we have eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth ourselves. We have stolen food from our friends, family, and employers, as well as from the grocery store. We have also stolen money to buy food. We have eaten beyond the point of being full and beyond the point of being sick of eating. We have continued to overeat, knowing all the while that we were disfiguring and maiming our bodies. We have isolated ourselves to eat, damaging our relationships and denying ourselves a full social life. For the sake of our compulsive eating, we have turned ourselves into objects of ridicule and we have destroyed our health. Then, horrified by what we were doing to ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We joined diet clubs and spas. We had ourselves hypnotized and analyzed. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. All of this we did willingly, hoping that we could someday, quote, have our cake and eat it too, quote. Some of us went from doctor to doctor looking for a cure. The doctors gave us diets, but we had no better success with those than with the other diets we'd been on. The doctors gave us shots and pills. Those worked for a while, but we inevitably lost control and overate again, putting back on the weight we had worked so hard to lose. Many of us tried fasting with and without a doctor's supervision. Usually we lost weight, but as soon as we started eating again, the compulsive eating behavior returned along with the weight. Some of us learned to purge ourselves with vomiting, laxatives, or excessive exercise. We'd stuff food in our mouths until we were in physical pain, then we'd, quote, get rid of it, quote. We damaged our digestive systems and our teeth while we starved our bodies of nutrients needed to live. Those of us who were overweight got plenty of advice from others about how to get to our, quote, ideal size, but nothing permanently solved our problem. We found that no matter what we did to ease our turmoil, our compulsive eating eventually returned. Over the long haul, our weight went up and our self-esteem went down. After a while, we became battle-weary and discouraged. Still, we could never accept our powerlessness. The prospect of being obese, sick, and out of control for the rest of our lives led some of us to conclude that life was simply not worth living. Many of us thought about suicide, and some of us tried it. Most of us, however, never reached suicidal desperation. Instead, we took comfort in a feeling that everything was all right as long as we got enough to eat. The only trouble was that as our compulsive eating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we continued to overeat. Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food long after it began to cause us misery. I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Brenna. Would someone please read from chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works?
Hi, my name is Carrie and I'm a compulsive overeater from Minnesota.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Welcome.
Hi. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at a turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
Thanks, Carrie. Would someone please read the 12 steps of recovery?
Sorry, guys. Okay. Hi, this is Kelly. I'm a compulsive overeater from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome.
Hi. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to... to have God remove these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Big Book, Chapter 5, page 60. Thank you, and I pass.
Thanks, Kelly. Would someone please read the 12 traditions of the program?
My name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Welcome.
Hello, the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry this message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thanks, Tamara. The tools of recovery. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous are a program of recovery. Webster's Dictionary defines tool as any person or thing used to get something done. We have many tools of the program which will help us recover on a daily basis. Tools are essential to get the job done, and they work for us. In order for a tool to work, it must be used. So too with our tools of recovery. I will ask that house sponsors explain how they use a particular tool with a limit of 3 minutes for each tool. Would someone be willing to be the timekeeper? Thanks, Sheila.
She already has it. I do.
That's why I thanked her. Virtual participants receive timing prompts via the chat, so watch for that. Abstinence plan of eating.
Hi, everyone. This is Melanie from Oregon, compulsive overeater.
Melanie, we can't see or hear you.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, we are, but we can't see you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not on the video. Unfortunately, I don't have that kind of bandwidth just yet, but we're working on it here.
Okay, thanks, Melanie.
I'm glad that you can hear me. Hi, everyone. This is Melanie from Oregon, compulsive overeater, plan of eating. A food plan is a commitment to recovery. The how disciplines were designed for food addicted people. We believe in a disciplined and structured approach. How abstainers do not modify their food plan to suit themselves and commit themselves to black and white abstinence. Deviations invite the return of many other problems. A food plan is not a personal thing in how. This means that we depend upon each other for the strength and growth that we need to remain abstinent. We join together in an effort to free the compulsive overeater from the bondage of food through the use of a food plan, positive thinking, and the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We eat weighed and measured meals with nothing in between except sugar-free beverages and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called into our sponsor, and committed so that we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. We also believe that negative thinking is a large part of the disease, so we abstain from negative thinking. Those of us who work the HOW program concept use the following guidelines for food plans. One, we do not write our own food plan. We use a food plan given to us by a doctor, nutritionist, or dietitian. We discuss it with our sponsor. We do not pick one that allows for any of our binge foods. If some food on our plan becomes a problem, we avoid it. Two, unless approved by a sponsor, we do not skip meals, switch meals, or combine meals. We do not deviate or manipulate our food plan in any way. If we need to change our committed food during the day, we call a sponsor. We weigh and measure all our food portions so that there is no guesswork. We do not measure by eye. We use a measuring cup, spoon, and a scale. So this is an opportunity for you to visualize. I'll explain what a abstinence kit looks like for me. In this kit, my sponsor taught me that I would pack within it a food scale of some sort, whether it be electronic or spring-loaded, electronic being digital. I'd have some measuring cups in there of varying sizes. I'd have some measuring teaspoons as well. I would have probably some sort of rag to be wiping things off and wiping my hands. I'd have a straight edge to level off the top of those kinds of things. And I would have a telephone so that I would have that handy in case something needed to be checked out. I'd have that handy for myself here. And that was awesome. What I do with that scale, I started with a spring-loaded scale. If you wanted to visualize this, if that's the place you wanted to go, within that spring-loaded scale, I would put it at an eye level because whatever food I was going to be into, I was going to see this needle marker go straight, split the line to make sure that it was accurate. It wasn't going to be one side or the other of that line. It's going to be straight split in the middle of that. And for me, for example, I had gone to a dietitian and she indicated that I would have 4 ounces of protein. And so that's what I would put in. And I wanted it straight on. And having it at eye level affords that opportunity to not be over top of it or deviate. The other thing with a digital scale would be the accuracy of the number that was on that as well. I would have on there a plate and I would put my 4 ounces on it. And it would absolutely say 4 ounces. And I would pick and pull until it would say exactly 4 ounces. That's what I would do is integrity, honesty, and the monkey chatter to be out of my head. That's what I would do with that scale. And there's other things your sponsor will talk to you about and teach you about the tear button and how you can build a meal on a plate on top of your plate, but I won't take the time to do that here. The measuring cups in varying sizes would be, we'll just go with a cup. In the beginning, I was given the measurement of 1 cup of vegetables, whether it be raw or cooked, and I would make sure that the vegetables were in that cup. I'd wipe off the edges, I'd wipe off the edge of it, and I would also take a straight knife across the top of that to make sure. And actually for me, I go one step further, I'd pull it up to my eyes and I'd make sure that those lettuce leaves weren't trying to poke out over the top because I wanted this thing so bad. And so that's what I would do with the cup and that would be my food and that's what I would put on my plate.
and the idea of the teaspoons, tablespoons, etc., depending on what you eat. Some of us have some nut butter sometimes. Some of us have oils at other particular times. And the same idea with that, I would put the food inside those teaspoons, tablespoons, exactly measuring it precisely, and take a straight edge and go across the top. Also for me, I washed off my straight edge knife so I wasn't contaminating the vegetables onto the nut butter or whatever I might would have at that particular time. There's also this idea about making sure that it was completely level, so that I would bring that up to my eye as well. People talk about the meniscus on a teaspoon. If you use your oil for that, that's why it's also important, because I'm going to push it to the edge and ledge. And if a bubble will suit me and I can have a little bit more, I'm going to do that. That's what's so nice about the straight edge. And I would take that clean straight edge and over the top I would go, and I'd make sure that there was nothing. I'd take my rag and wipe it all around. I didn't want anything dropping off of that onto my plate. And that would be the scales, the cups and the spoons. The telephone is there, absolutely, if something goes awry, if I find that something is spoiled, somebody has taken something that I had already committed for my food and I needed to replace it, I would be calling my sponsor first, and then if she wasn't available, I'd be calling somebody else for that. Oftentimes people will have a travel kit inside their car, because I don't leave my food up to chance whatsoever. That's too risky behavior, so I have a whole different kind of abstinence kit in my car for quick going. I was always have a spring-loaded scale in there, especially in the winter time, because batteries are kind of iffy. And then I would have at least one item of every single type of food that I was given by my nutritionist in some sort of form in a freeze-dried bag or a can or something like that. And within there, I'd have utensils, and I'd have a can opener, that sort of thing in there as well, just to be sure that I had all bases covered. It is absolutely that critical. I hope that gives you the information in a general way. Please, you'll get more information from your sponsor and be trained really well in that area. Number four, we weigh ourselves once a month until we reach our goal weight, and once a week on maintenance. Five, unless advised otherwise by our doctor, we take a multivitamin, drink 64 ounces of water a day. Six, we do not drink alcohol. Seven, we do not use foods containing sugar, except if sugar is listed fifth or beyond on the ingredients label. And above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HAL program. It is not the extra string bean that counts. It is a decision to take it. I'm going to start my 3 minutes here. I believe that's the amount of time that I have. It's a commitment to abstinence. It really was a commitment. I felt every single emotion, every drop of blood in my body, every vein, every nerve ending knew that. It was a commitment. When I talked to my house sponsor, when I talked to the woman that ultimately became my sponsor, and she started talking to me about these things, I felt it. I felt the height of excitement, and I felt the fear so pulsating through my body, because it truly was a commitment to this deal. When that threshold was crossed for me, I knew in this particular case, because how is the kind of thing for people that have tried everything else, there was no turning back for me. And it was the hope by which I have the recovery that I have today. It was clean. It was clear. It was spelled out. My sponsor and I got together and shared much more than what I read to you today about how important it was, how critical it was, how I was going to do this in restaurants, how I was going to do this at parties, every place I would go, how I was going to plan ahead, because I was going to protect it with all of my might. You know, people talk about what's the most important thing in recovery, and there's varying ideas about that. But if I don't have entire abstinence, I'm not going to get anything else. If I don't have entire abstinence, then all bets are off. I'm going to be dead. I'm going to be absolutely dead. What I wanted to read something to you from the Big Book for is just to let you know how critical this entire abstinence is, and how I just don't play with it in one way or another. Absolutely don't play with it. I don't ask if I can, you know, maybe on this particular thing, maybe have it fourth on the ingredients label. I don't ask, you know, if I can't even think of another example, but I'm telling you, I am clear and clean about what this deal is, so that I can have some sort of snowball's chance to get a treatment for the disease, which centers in my mind. It doesn't center in my food, it centers in my mind. That's what I needed to have relief from. That's what I needed to have help from. That's what I needed to have recovery from. But let me read to you on the big book on page XXX. It happens to be the doctor's opinion. And this is what a trained doctor has to say about what's going to work if I'm going to be prepared to have a treatment for this disease. It says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. This is a starting place. This is the ground zero. This is the beginning of what it is that's going to get me the rest, which is a spiritual awakening and a transformation as a result of these steps. Thanks, without a pass.
Thanks, Melanie. Caroline? Room will get that.
Hi, I'm Sheila, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sheila. Welcome.
Sponsorship. Sponsors are OA members who are committed to abstinence and to living the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability. We ask a sponsor to guide us through our program of recovery on all three levels, physical, emotional, and spiritual. In working with other members of OA and sharing their experience, strength, and hope, sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own sobriety. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is a program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask how it was achieved. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. A house sponsor is a compulsive overeater who has completed at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has taken the first three steps of the program. Sponsors have also completed at least 70 days of assignments. Reflections to the sponsor, suggestions for discussion. No list of reflections and meditations are end-alls and be-alls for the newcomer. A sponsor must be attentive not only to what the new person is saying, but also to what the newcomer is not saying. There are many newcomers who are reticent to purchase books and are hesitant to throw themselves headlong into the program. Therefore, we have a list of pre-commitment assignments. Above all, do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is not the habit that results in some trouble. The HOW concept is an alternative for people who have tried everything else. Therefore, the program is an immutable triumvirate of tools, steps, and traditions. Using the tools of weighing and measuring our food, sponsors, meetings, phone calls, reading and writing, service, and anonymity, we follow the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of OA in order to free ourselves from the bondage of food addiction. Sponsors do not have the right to play God. We help each other. I'm not sure if we have any newcomers out there, but maybe I'm going to maybe just direct this to the newcomers, and maybe those of us also that need some reminding. But a sponsor is really critical. It's critical for each of us to have a sponsor in order to be able to work this program. For me, it was very critical at the very beginning. I mean, it's still very critical, but at the very beginning, really what that sponsor helped me with is they helped me understand the program. They helped me get through some of the basic things. I remember coming to my first meeting and just being very overwhelmed with everything that I was hearing and was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? And really my sponsor just helped me with one step at a time. That first day it was really like, okay, let's figure out what you can eat, what you're going to eat for today. And the next day she would say to me, okay, tell me what you're going to eat, but I'm also going to have you read this and do this first question, and then you're going to you wrote. She answered all, you know, that very beginning, answered lots of basic food questions. And she also encouraged me to reach out to other fellows in the program and get answers to some of my questions where maybe she didn't know the answer, where maybe there could be multiple answers. I sometimes had some questions and she wasn't able to answer them, and she would reach out to her sponsor. And she just really held my hand one day at a time. I guess we hear that a lot in this program, one day at a time, but just helped my, walked me through things. And, you know, like I said, at the very beginning, it was very basic questions about the program, questions about food, questions how to weigh this or measure this, or is this a starch or a vegetable, or whatever, answer those basic questions. And then, you know, as time went on, she was able to help me with a lot more things that were much more complex than simple food questions. So I can't, any newcomers out there, or anyone with one without a sponsor, I just can't reiterate how important it is to have a sponsor. Our sponsors, my sponsor anyways, knows me better than I know myself many times. She can anticipate things that, or not anticipate, but can sometimes hear things that I'm not saying and can kind of question me on that, or call me out on some of those things. And I, you know, I just don't know where I would be without a sponsor. And with that, I will pass.
Thanks, Sheila. Thank you. Will all sponsors Howe and OA please join me in sharing the following: how long an OA and how long abstinent in OA or how much weight lost or gained. This is not a time for sharing for sponsors. Please keep it brief and no applauding between sponsors. If they wish to, sponsors may announce that they have an opening for a sponsee and provide their phone numbers. Please form a line starting at the microphone and continue behind whoever's first. Remote sponsors are invited to share following our line by clicking the raise hand button and turning on your video camera, or just turning on your video. When it is your turn to share, you will hear your name and see a "you are unmuted by host" prompt on the screen. Following your share, please turn off your video as the meeting moderator remutes your line. Sponsors joining us on the phone, please wait for a pause in the line and press star and 6 on your telephone keypad.
Hi, I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater. I'm a sponsor on the late shift. I've been abstaining a little over 33 years. I have 18 years and 7 months of abstinence in OA. How I've gained 10 pounds and a little bit of sanity.
Good evening, I'm Mary G., compulsive overeater. Came to OA in Massachusetts in the spring of 2004, moved to the snowy Midwest in October 2012 in time for Halloween, which was my first meeting. I became abstinent the next day and I've lost and maintained 75 pounds.
Hello everyone, I'm Nancy D., compulsive overeater. I came into the rooms of HAL in June of 2017. I became abstinent in September of 2017, and I have been relieved of 90 pounds and have been abstinent, well, a recommitment date of, oh my goodness, March of 2019. Yes, 651-336-5914. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater. I came directly into HAL on October 10th, 2007. I lost 150 pounds and kept it off for almost 7 years. And then I chose to leave the program and I quickly gained 110 of those pounds back. I was out for 2.5 years. And my current abstinence date is July 26, 2019, and I'm down 66 pounds.
Hi, I'm Sheila, compulsive overeater. I came directly to HAL in May of 2015 with an abstinence date of May 19th of 2015, and I have been relieved of over 90 pounds.
Liz.
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz A., grateful compulsive overeater and food addict in Ormond Beach, Florida. Hi. And a sponsor in the two-hour How format. I began working How in 2018. My back-to-back abstinence date is 8/8/2019. I've released 58 pounds, 35 of those in two-hour How. Liz A. Pass.
Megan.
Hey, all. This is Megan in Virginia. I'm a compulsive overeater, a nominal OA How sponsor. Let's see. I came into How in February of 2009. Had a relapse in the fall of 12 to the fall of 13, and then returned to program in November of 2013 after having gained back 90 pounds. My back-to-back abstinence date currently is June 8th of 2015. I'm at maintenance weight. I've had an abstinent pregnancy and a relapse survivor, and I pass.
Deborah.
Hey, good evening, everyone. My name is Deborah. I am a sponsor in this program. My back-to-back abstinence date is August 23rd, 2015. I am down over 20 pounds from my top weight. This is Deborah from Missouri.
Sue.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sue L. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came to OA How on December 8th of 2002. I got abstinent 2 days later on the 10th. And in that time, I've been relieved of 130 pounds.
Tamara.
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came into traditional OA in January of 2016. I heard about the How program at the Buffalo Retreat and became abstinent April 3rd of 2017. Because of the miracles of this program, I've been relieved of 97 pounds from my top weight, with over 75 pounds in the How program. My recommitment date is December 1st of 2019, and I pass.
Revitel.
Hi, everybody. I'm a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater and food addict. My name is Revitel, calling in from Toronto. I walked into the OA rooms in 2004, had a very hard time remaining abstinent until I was introduced to the two-hour OA How rooms in 2017. On May 23rd of 2017, I became abstinent and continue to abstain from compulsive overeating to this day. Thank you, God. One day at a time. And as a result of working this program in this format, my body has released over 100 pounds, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. Thank you.
Jane.
Hi, I'm Jane, compulsive overeater. I came into regular OA 11 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. I had some abstinence in that program at 1.2 years of abstinence. I came into How September 19th, 2019. I've been abstinent ever since, and I am a two-hour How sponsor. And with that, I'll pass. Oh, I've released 12 pounds so far. Thanks. I'll pass.
Heidi, why don't you?
Any other sponsors online or on the phone? You can press star and six on your telephone keypad.
Hi, this is Melanie from Oregon, a compulsive overeater, two-hour OA House sponsor. First introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in 1989 in the fall. Became entirely absent in How on November 5th, 2005. I've been entirely absent for over 14 and a half years. I have an anniversary date in How of November 5th, 2018. Lost over 165 pounds, 13 and a half years of those. Been maintaining it, thank God for the program. Melanie in Oregon, pass.
This is from a grateful member of How from Iowa. I came into traditional OA back in the early 90s, didn't think it was for me, so I left. Came into the doors of How August 3rd of 2005, and that was my birthday. I started the program next day, August 4th, 2005 is my back-to-back absent date. I'm down around 95 pounds in How and around 105 pounds from my highest weight. Been on maintenance for going on 14 years. Thanks.
Anybody else? Thank you. Clay Feet. Yay. We should remember that all OAs have clay feet. We should not set any member upon a pedestal and mark her or him out as a perfect OA. It is not fair to the person to be singled out in this fashion, and if the person is wise, he or she will not wish it. If the person we single out as an ideal OA has a fall, we are in danger of falling too. Without exception, we are all only one bite away from a binge. No matter how long we have been in OA or how, nobody is entirely safe. OA itself should be our ideal, not any particular member of it. The tool of anonymity.
Oh, hi, Jane. Compulsive overeater again.
Hi, Jane. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you. Tool number three, anonymity. Anonymity is a tool as well as a tradition because it guarantees that we place principles before personalities. It offers each of us freedom of expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we as individual OA members have the right to make our membership known within our community. Anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication means that we never allow our faces or last names to be used once we identify ourselves as OA members. Within the fellowship, anonymity means that whatever we share with another OA member will be held in respect and confidence. What we hear at meetings should remain there. It should be understood, however, that anonymity must not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is not a break of anonymity to give our names and addresses to the secretary of our group or to other service offices of OA for the purpose of conducting OA business, which is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not a break of anonymity to enlist 12-step help for group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. If their disease has reactivated and we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may in effect help kill them in their anonymity. Anonymity is the part of the program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellows and share for the first time, honestly, who we are, where we have been, and where we hope to go, without fear that our story will be told outside these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place where we have no fear being judged or criticized. We are accepted as we are at that moment. This is the first time for most of us that we experience sharing where we are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA at rock bottom, mangled emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We are supported back to health with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We are encouraged to speak of our pain, and we are lovingly told, your secrets are safe. Come share our recovery. Recovery on a threefold level, physical, emotional, and spiritual. Lastly, a word to newcomers. Please join us. However, if you decide that our program is not for you, please remember that our anonymity allows us to grow and recover from a very serious disease. Whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. So my first experience with anonymity was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 11 years ago. And I remember it being very vital to me because I was embarrassed to be there. I didn't want anyone to recognize me. I didn't want anyone to
tell anyone outside the room that I had gone to an AA meeting. It was a very personal endeavor, and it took a lot of courage to go. And I thought I kind of had a really good grasp of what anonymity was. When I came into HOW, well, first of all, I also, for some reason, even though I'd been in 12-step programs for so long, I was hesitant to just show up and join and be heard. And so I haunted this meeting for a number of weeks before I spoke up or did anything like that. So it was really lovely to go to a meeting of HOW and not, and to just listen and to hide if I wanted. And slowly that helped me to kind of come out of my shell and be part of the meeting. When I did finally begin the questions, get a sponsor, get a food plan, do all the things that I needed to do to really do this program, I learned that even though there are HOW members all over the world, there are many of us that we connect with, it was not only vital that I did not share a name of someone I had spoken to, but it was also important that I didn't reveal the country even of people that I was speaking to, because some countries in the world have only one or two members of HOW. And so if I say that I spoke to somebody in a certain country, you may know right away who that was. And so I started to learn that even in Canada, if I say that I spoke to somebody on the East Coast, there are only a handful of East Coasters, so people may actually be able to know who I spoke of. So it's really been teaching me to be anonymous, like to the extreme. And I think that's carried out in my life outside of program. So gossip was a big shortcoming for me. And so practicing anonymity at this level and HOW on a daily basis and all my calls with my sponsor, all these kinds of things has helped me to practice it or to really understand it when I'm talking to coworkers or, you know, that kind of thing. People in the community, I live in a small town now, so it's like even more important to be anonymous. And yeah, and then the last thing I wanted to say was, I also feel really strongly that, you know, HOW might not be for everybody, but it has saved many lives. And so if I were to ever go out or, you know, thank you. I'll just finish up with this. When I hear people, you know, if they feel that HOW isn't for them, to keep that also anonymous, because it may not be for everybody, but it may save the life of the person who's coming next. And when we talk about it not working, it may prevent them from finding the help they need. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks, Jane. Telephone calls.
Hey, all. This is Megan in Virginia. Telephone.
Hi, Megan. Welcome.
Hey. Compulsive overeating is a disease of isolation. The telephone is a means of communicating with another compulsive overeater between meetings. It provides an immediate outlet for those hard-to-handle highs and lows we all experience. The telephone is also a daily link to our sponsors, and as a part of the surrender process, is a tool by which we learn to ask for help, reach out, and extend that same help to others. In HOW, we are asked to make at least 4 telephone calls a day. 1 to our sponsor and 3 more to other OA members. These calls give us an opportunity to talk program on a daily basis. The telephone is our lifeline. So I went to sign up for something to you know, participate this evening, and telephone, I think, was the only tool left. And so I was like, well, that's kind of ironic, because I was a bit annoyed at the phone today. To be completely honest, I don't normally mind the phone calls. They're, especially today with the Telegram app, they have gotten
so much more incredibly easy than they used to be. I kind of feel like one of those curmudgeonly old timers that say, well, back in my day, you know, because it is so much easier with the Telegram app. But I was on the phone for a lot of today doing service, and I realized, you know, I was leaving message after message, and I started to feel kind of like, you know, grumpy about it. And it made me pause and think, because how many times have I not returned a phone call, right? You know, we all get lots of calls. Well, a lot of us get a lot of calls. And so, you know, do I take the time to return them? Do I try to follow up with people when I can? How difficult it is when you, as especially as a newcomer, if you're putting out a bunch of phone calls and you're not getting those return calls. I was thinking about that today after I'd left all these messages. But it also really reminds me, and the reading talks about this, that it breaks us of our isolation, which is so important. And for me, it's like a fire drill, right? I make these three phone calls every day to my fellows, talk about what's going on in my program, maybe, you know, what am I struggling with, what's bothering me. And today, thank God, that's not the food anymore, but that's not the food anymore, but it is, life is still life, and there's still hard things, right? So I'll still have things I need to talk about that I need to share in a safe place. And these phone calls are a safe place because of the anonymity tool that was just shared on prior to my pitch. And this practice of doing it daily, even on a day that's just an average Tuesday, right? Gives me the opportunity that when things do go really awry, or I'm having a really tough day, picking up that phone is automatic. And I cannot say how many times that has saved my butt when I've just had a day where everything has gone wrong and the food is looking really attractive because everything has just piled up. I can reach out, pick up the phone, and talk to people that I know. They know where I'm coming from, and they will be able to talk me through it so that I can walk through that day abstinently. And I can just turn around and do that service for somebody else on another day when I'm having a good day and they're struggling. So with that, I pass, and thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Megan. Meetings.
Hi, Kelly, compulsive overeater in California.
Hi, Kelly. Hey. Welcome. Hey.
Meetings are gatherings of two or more compulsive overeaters who come together to share their experience before and after recovery and to share the strength and hope OA has given them. Meetings are an opportunity for us to identify and confirm a common problem by relating to one another and by sharing the gifts we receive through this program. We find that being on time for meetings enhances our recovery and provides service to the meeting. Though there are many kinds of meetings, fellowship is the basis of all of them. A HOW member must we attend at least one HOW meeting a week. So I always love to share on meetings because we're live on a meeting. When I first came to HOW and was told I would need to find one meeting a week, I looked at all the time slots and thought, none of those really work for me. So I would just bob in here and there, you know, week by week doing a different meeting till I was talking with a hookup, and she said, well, do you have a home meeting? And I said, no. And she said, find one and be of service. So I love what we do in our meetings, that you don't have to be a sponsor. There's so many ways to give service by being reading any of the readings in the beginning. When you're a sponsor, you get to pitch on tools. We have the special ceremony. I actually stepped up on this meeting here. So what I love about this meeting is just that we can see everyone's faces, but it does, you know, a meeting requires a lot of work from all behind the scenes. And so God bless everyone who makes this meeting happen. Meetings, you know, that's how we started from the big book with Abby and Bill, just one day in his kitchen, one alcoholic talking to another. And when we come to the meetings, you know, once a week, I feel like we have that opportunity to do that together. I'll never forget when I started popping into this meeting one time, someone reached out to me and said, hey, are you going to be on the meeting next week? And I didn't even know they saw I was on the meeting. And I just thought that was really cool. And so I do that to others as well. Although at this meeting, we say, see you tonight, because we all see each other on these meetings. So it's pretty cool to just find ways to give service, stay connected. You know, we hear the same tools every single week, but there's always such a gem that I pick up on from something that someone shares. And it's always just exactly what I needed to hear. So I pass on the advice that I got from a fellow, which is find a meeting, get on a meeting, and give service. And that's what I have. Thanks, pass.
Thanks, Kelly. Literature and writing.
Me.
Yes.
hello, this is Sue L. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Sue. Welcome. Sue, welcome.
Oh, I gotta read. I always forget that part. Here we go. Literature and writing. Literature, we study the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous, referred to as the Big Book, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, another AA book, to reinforce our program. By substituting the words food and compulsive eating for the words alcohol and alcoholism, we can identify closely. We also read OA literature, the OA book, Overeaters Anonymous, referred to as the Brown Book, the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, for today for daily meditation, and Lifeline, our journal of recovery. Read on a daily basis, our literature impresses on us certain basic truths that we have found vital to our growth. Our literature and AA books are an ever-available tool that gives insight into our problem, as well as a strength to deal with it, and a very real hope that there is a solution for us. Writing. In addition to our writing, our inventories, and the list of people we have harmed, most of us have found that writing has been an indispensable tool for working the steps. Further, putting our thoughts and feelings down on paper or describing a trouble incident helps us to better understand our actions and reactions in a way that is often not revealed to us by simply thinking or talking about them. In the past, compulsive eating was our most common reaction to life. When we put our difficulties down on paper, it becomes easier to see situations more clearly and perhaps better discern any necessary action. And so in the family afterword, it says, this painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. So I chose literature and writing because it's my least favorite tool, and it still is to this day. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I like it or if I don't like it. I do it. I do it because I reap the benefits of this program each and every day. And I don't know if I need to do an assignment every day. I don't know if I just did two hookups instead of three, I would still be abstinent. I don't know if I didn't weigh and measure in restaurants, if I would still be abstinent, but I don't want to find out. I do not want to mess with the formula that has been given to me and that works for me each and every day. And there is, honest to God, in the, you know, many years I've been doing this, there has not been a day that I thought, maybe I don't want to do this, or maybe it's too hard and I don't need this, because the effort I put into this thing is so minuscule to what I get back, what I reap. And when I read these few little things here, the painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling. You know, I mean, we all have a past and we all have benefited from that past. And, you know, I've got a sordid past, and I've spent, you know, I spent nights in psych wards. I mean, I just have. And it is amazing to me how I've been able to be of service to fellows because I'm open about that and I'm there for people that go through something like that. And so it's very, I just love that we just, we keep ourselves open so we can be of service wherever that is. So anyway, I hope that was coherent. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks. Service.
Yep. Service, tool number 7. This is Mary G, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers is the basic purpose of our fellowship, and therefore the most fundamental form of service. Any service, no matter how small, that will help reach a fellow sufferer adds to the quality of our own recovery. Putting away chairs, making coffee, talking to newcomers, doing whatever needs to be done in a group or for OA as a whole are ways in which we give back what we have so generously been given. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working the 12 steps. Service fulfills that promise. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion, for this I am responsible. So I thought I'd start by reading, I thought I'd read something from As Bill Sees It. And this must be from the AA. Page 14 and 15. Faith without works is dead. How appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he cannot survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he does not work, he will surely drink again. And if he drinks, he will surely die. Then faith will be dead indeed. So I think of all the OA types of programs, I think the HOW program is one that really, really emphasizes service. And I'm so grateful for the service that I have received. For instance, at my first meeting on Halloween, I went up to the speaker at that time to talk with her. And she just, you know, moments after I spoke with her, asked me if I had a sponsor. I didn't even have to ask for a sponsor. She asked me if I needed a sponsor. And I said that I did. I had taken a coin as well, a chip of desire. And so she temp sponsored me right off the get-go because as the person that did sponsorship said, we really need to have somebody that'll walk along. I guess that was you, Sheila. We need to have somebody that walks along with us every step of the way, especially at the beginning, but all the way along. And other things and it says, do what you can when you can. You just need to find out the niche that you fit into. I know on this particular meeting, Sheila and I share the service position of finding people to be leaders. So one of the things that I do is when the second Tuesday of the month when I can't be here, I will go to another face-to-face meeting here in town and try and recruit leaders from our many meetings because I always pitch on the service of doing that. I'm not asking people to leave their home group. I'm just asking them to come and do some service for this particular meeting. And I generally have a pretty good response for that if people are available. And this is in the room, it's a pretty small meeting that we have going here in the room. So there is absolutely no way that I can sit in the back of the room and hide, which is very, very, very capable of doing that in some of our other larger in-room meetings, even the rooms that some of them have phone components to them too, but you can't do that in this meeting, which is good. And the other service thing I like to do is I try and, when someone has identified themselves as a newcomer, or we get that list, the big list from the OA HOW, I think it's an OA HOW list that says people that are returning or 30 days, I try and call those people. I would have been so grateful in the beginning to have someone call me. Because I remember in the beginning just sitting with that huge list and just calling and calling and calling. So, you know, calling newcomers is such a service. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Will all people doing service for OA at any level, please stand and applaud service, even if you're at home and you're watching. Yay. If you have not yet added your information to the chat for our We Care book, please take a moment and do so now so we can add it to the book that will be emailed out. We will keep the We Care book circulating until everyone has had an opportunity to sign it. The folder will continue to circulate for the duration of the meeting so that everyone may take names and phone numbers for their personal contacts. Enter your email into the chat to receive the list. The Minnesota OA How Live meeting is a friendly place. We want to get to know each other. If you are here with us today for the first time in the meeting room, will you please stand and introduce yourself by first name only? We are all returners tonight. If you are attending for the first time virtually, please turn on your video and unmute your line or press star and six on your telephone's keypad so we can welcome you. Anybody new for the first time tonight?
Yeah, my name's Ann O. This is the first time I've been on the meeting, the Tuesday virtual meeting, but I'm only here by phone because I'm not very good at the modern technology, but it's, so I just thought I'd say I was here. Thank you.
Great, thanks. Hi, Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. May we have a treasurer's report? Hi, I'm Heidi, your treasurer for this meeting and compulsive overeater.
Hi, Heidi.
I just want to reiterate kind of what I talked about last week in that lately our finances coming in have been less than our monthly rent and including rent for the Zoom line, et cetera, going out. And I just wanted to thank everyone who does give a donation through PayPal. And I'll tell you, well, I can tell you right now, you can do that at mnhowlive.org to donate. Our current balance is $820, of which we have to keep a minimum balance of $500 in our account. And we do pay fees, 2.9% plus 30 cents for each transaction at PayPal. So just keep that in mind. That's our treasury report. If you have any questions, give me a call. I need three a day too. Thanks. Our seventh tradition helps this meeting provide the equipment, enhance our website, make it accessible to individuals who are deaf or anyone using ASL, refine the technology, develop other live OA face-to-face groups, and more. A basket will be passed for those here in the room and those joining virtually. You may go to mnhowlive.org to donate. Pass the little bag here. I'm sorry, I've got some bad news for you. It was bad news for us, and it will probably be bad news for you. Whether you quit 6 days, months, or years, if you go out and take the first compulsive bite of food, you'll end up just like you have been in the past. You are a compulsive overeater. And I didn't make it up. It's from the Big Book, page 187. Are there any announcements in the room?
Don't let me down.
Hi, I'm Sheila, still a compulsive overeater. So earlier this week, everyone probably received the email coming out from MN How Live, also known as Howard, giving you the information for tonight's meeting. Also in there, at the beginning of that email, if you've read it, you would have noticed just some communication about possibly changing the time for this meeting. Actually starting this meeting an hour earlier, starting it at 6 p.m. Central Time instead of 7 p.m. Central Time. So I'd be starting it at 7 p.m. Eastern or 4 p.m. Pacific Time. If you have any feedback on that, we would love to hear your feedback before actually making that switch. Just want to make sure that that is a good time for people, or if you have other suggestions. So if you have any feedback, positive or negative, please shoot an email to mnhowlive@gmail.com. Yes. And we also, Howard was just mentioning that we also need to check with our interpreter people as well. So it's not like an official thing at all. We're just trying to get some feedback at this point, just to even see if it's a possibility. So any feedback you have, please send that to mnhowlive@gmail.com. And then also just wanted to remind everyone, I may be sounding like a broken record, but I'm sounding like a broken record because we still have openings for the Buffalo Retreat coming up the first weekend in April, April 3rd to the 5th. You can go out to the Unity Intergroup website, which is overeaters.org, to get information for that and to register for that. And as soon as that retreat is filled, you won't have to hear me talk about it anymore. So just go sign up and plan to join us in Buffalo the first weekend in April. Also on our Unity Intergroup website, there'll be some information about a Quick Steps workshop taking place in March in the Minneapolis area, as well as the Big Book Study, which is the last weekend in May, also taking place in the Minneapolis area. And I think that's it, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Sheila.
Hey all, this is Megan in Virginia.
Hi Megan.
Hey, hi again. I'm one of the fellows who searches for speakers, virtual speakers for this meeting. So if there's anybody virtually, or I guess in the room too, we do need speakers for March, and we actually need a speaker for next week, the 25th, I'm pretty sure is the right date. So we're looking to fill those spots. And if anybody's willing to give some service to this meeting, and we haven't heard your story, I think it's in a 3-month time frame. Someone can correct me if my memory is wrong. But if we haven't heard from you recently, we would love for you to share your experience, strength, and hope. And my phone number is 757-375-3102. I'll also put that in the chat, and I'd love to hear from you if you would like to speak next week or one of the other Tuesdays in March. Thanks.
Thanks, Megan. Any other announcements? All right, literature and books. Newcomers and sponsor materials are located at the Virtual Intergroups resource page at www.oahowphonemeetings.com. You can purchase OA books and pamphlets at bookstore.oa.org. It is now time for medallions. At How Meetings, we recognize the milestones of recovery for those working the How program. All other OA abstinence is given a round of applause. Anyone joining us virtually may request a medallion by turning on your camera and unmuting your phone. And I will do the medallions. All righty. We do like to celebrate our days. Just join with each other and celebrate that it happens, and it happens on a regular basis. And kind of like we said and chuckled about earlier, it works when you work it. And when you work it enough days in a row, we collect medallions. I'm wondering if anybody has 10 or more years of back-to-back abstinence that they're celebrating tonight. 2 through 9 years, 18 months, 1 year, 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, 2 months. Hi, Michelle.
Oh, I can't hear you, Michelle.
I can't hear you, but I did see you put it on the chat.
Hi. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Can you hear me now?
Yay,
oh, thank you very much.
I have a medallion here if you would like me to send it to you.
I will.
You know how to get me your information.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
Yay. Anybody else 30 days?
I have 30 days.
Brenna. Yay. Yay. Congratulations. You get a virtual hug.
Thanks.
And I have a medallion, an actual medallion. If you would like it, I can send it to you.
You can just send me the vibes.
We will send you the vibes.
Thank you.
Excellent. Congratulations. Anybody else 30 days? They're a hot commodity tonight. No? Well, we do have one more. I'm going to pass Michelle's around here. We do have one more medallion that is open to anybody. It's a 24-hour medallion or a chip of desire. It does not mean that you've been abstinent for 24 hours or even that you want to be abstinent for 24 hours. It doesn't mean you're signing up to join anything. It just means that you may have seen something different here and you think maybe you'd like to do something different with your food, and you may have seen something here that gives you a little hope. And if you would like a piece of hope to take with you, we can mail it to you if you're online, or we can hand it to you in person if you're here in the meeting room. It's a 24-hour chip of desire. They are free and they're good for the newcomer, and they're good for anybody who wants a little extra love in their program and something just to hang on to and know that this community is with you, doing it with you. Is there anybody who would like a 24-hour chip of desire? Anybody? If you're on the phone, you can press *6 to unmute. All right. If you change your mind, you can let somebody know in the chat and we'll take care of that for you. Thank you. Step-ups. At this point in our meeting, we ask the group to join us as we celebrate another example of the miracles that abound in OA. The stepping up portion of the meeting asks the sponsor to introduce a newcomer who has at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence, who has completed the first 3 steps of the program, and who is now ready to become a sponsor. At HOW meetings, new sponsors are presented with a cactus plant to signify the tough love of the program. Stick with the stickers and a reminder to drink your water, and a reminder that we don't water down the program. And I don't believe there are any step-ups tonight, but keep coming back, it's happening. Anniversaries, birthdays are celebrated for each year of continuous abstinence. At anniversaries, a candle is lit at the beginning of the meeting. We invite, are there any anniversaries? Not tonight. Virtual attendees, you may sign up to celebrate your step-ups and anniversaries at the link on our webpage. Does the leader qualify for 10 minutes? I qualify for 10 minutes.
Hey, Sheila.
Yes. Do you want to- favorite picture of me. Shows that I still haven't fully lost my baby fat. My name is Heidi. I'm a compulsive overeater. And They're going to show you my photos. So my story with Hal, just to show, I qualified from birth. And I even remember, I don't remember this. I don't remember a lot of my childhood, but I remember seeing videos from our childhood and kind of having memories that way. And I know that when we were potty trained, we were always given candy. If you did anything, you got candy for doing anything, any life task, you know, or to get out of something, you got something. Or if you did something, we're always rewarded with food, and it was usually sugar. And I was one of five kids, and we always ate really fast too. So I'm really trying to slow down my eating, even weighed and measured. I mean, I feel like I can eat it in one bite. And I'm trying to slow that down because I grew up in an alcoholic home. You could never get away from the table if you weren't done eating. So you ate quickly and a lot. You can eat a lot when you don't realize you're full or even that that's an option. And then I came to the point where full didn't mean anything anyway. But in 2007, I really hit my top and my bottom. I hit my top weight. My top known weight was 320. And I had looked into doing gastric bypass. I had tried every other diet plan under the sun, you know, jazzercise, cabbage soup. That was always like the dumbest thing. It was like the more you ate, the more you lost. And I guess they meant the soup, but I just thought it meant anything and it didn't work, funny enough. But I tried everything, Weight On Workshop. I tried a thing through my church, Weight Watchers, numerous times. And I had looked at gastric bypass surgery, and that was right before I came to Howe. And I don't know, something in me knew that that wasn't going to do anything either. Like, unless they cut my, I don't know, like I needed a lobotomy to go with it. There was something I knew that just physically changing my body wasn't going to change my head. And I had gone through chemical dependency treatment many years ago, before that. So I kind of knew of all the A's, and I had been in AA a long time ago and hadn't gone for many years. But my mom was a faithful program goer of her own program. And she said, just try OA before you go in to, you know, look further into the surgery. And I said, fine, you know. And I looked up OA online, and I had never heard about it from anybody. I didn't know there was a difference between how or the phone meetings or a regular meeting or whatever. I just looked it up, and I just went to the closest meeting to my house because I didn't really want to put out any more effort than was necessary. Which is funny that I ended up at a how meeting. but it was the closest one to me, a Wednesday night how meeting. And I remember talking to my husband before I went, saying, you know, I don't know anything about this, but whatever they ask me to do, I'm going to do. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I walked into that meeting, and it was a how meeting. I didn't care or know that it was 2 hours. I didn't know any difference. I cried through the whole meeting, and somebody asked me to do a reading, and I read the first reading of the meeting. And again, I just said, whatever they ask me to do, I'm going to do. So I cried through What Is How. It's not a very emotional reading, but I cried through the whole thing and through the whole meeting. And then somebody came up to me after the meeting and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I just said, okay. You know, they didn't say, do you want a sponsor, or are you looking for one, or I don't even know if they asked me my name. I just remember her saying, I'm going to be your sponsor. Here's what you need to do for tonight. And you need to purchase these books. And I didn't have any money with me. And I said, well, can I just get the books and pay for them next week? No, they wouldn't let me. And so there was my first how resentment on day one. But my mom, who is amazing and really the reason my whole family is in recovery. She drove me to her sponsor's house, who had also been in AA, and they had the AA books and said that I could borrow theirs. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, if I didn't start that night, I would probably not be alive today. I'm so grateful for my mom for so many things, and that's not even close to the least of them. So I just did whatever they told me to do. And I hadn't been to a regular OA meeting, so I didn't know it was an hour longer than a regular meeting or, you know, the tool. It was just all part of what they did. And people at that meeting had what I wanted. I probably didn't even know what I wanted when I first started. I just knew what I didn't want, and they didn't have what I didn't want. And there was joy. I didn't dare to dream that I would ever lose weight like they lost weight. In fact, my husband and I thought if I just try it just to not keep gaining weight. That's really was my goal at the time, was to not keep going, you know, because I passed all of my, I'm never going to get above this weight, I'm never going to get above that weight, and I got above all of them. And then I just quit weighing, because then you don't know, so clearly it's not happening if you don't look. So that didn't fare well for me either. But I did. I just, being desperate in this program, what I remember at that first meeting is somebody said, if you've tried everything else and failed, OA How, and you're still desperate, OA How may be the place for you. And I was desperate. And that is a great place to be. And it took me a long time to lose my weight and how the first time around, almost 3 years, actually. And I lost a lot of weight quick, and then it was painfully slow until I got to maintenance. And I remember the day I got to maintenance, like, it was supposed to be some big epiphany, and I think I got, all that changed is I got like a half a fruit more or something, and I was like, kind of a ripoff or something. I don't know what I thought I was going to get. I knew I wasn't going to get like a blizzard or something, you know, but, and thankfully I didn't even want one then. So that was another lovely piece that I didn't even want that. But to lose a craving for anything when that had just consumed my every waking and probably sleeping moment, I just don't remember my dreams. But that really was a miracle that came very quickly for me, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I'm still amazed that I don't crave sugar or volume or anything that can be craved. So I'm really grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for this meeting. I know someone else said we do have a lot of meetings here in the Twin Cities, and it is easy to go to a meeting with 45 people in it and sit in the back and not be able to get a tool if you're not at least 20 minutes early or get a reading or something. You can't hide in this meeting, and that's good for me because I isolated a long time and I need to be seen and I need to see other people. So I really appreciate all the people who are on the meeting, even if you're, whether you're on video or on the phone, it's very much appreciated. And I'm grateful that we can do service for one another. And that's probably enough. I'm just going to stop it there and say, give me a call if you need any calls this week, or if you don't, give me a call because we do it together. 651-216-1729. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi.
I would like to, I don't know who I'm going to introduce. I'm going to introduce Valerie. Hi, Valerie, our guest speaker who qualifies for 20 minutes.
Unmuted. Okay. Can you see me? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much. I am Valerie, a very grateful member of OA How. And I am so excited, you guys. I am so excited because I found my pictures. I had this this album that I made years ago, and I haven't been able to find it. And just about 5 minutes ago, I thought I'm going to go in my closet and find my bag of clothes that I used to wear to maybe show you guys one. And sure enough, I pull them out and my pictures are there. So I'm so excited. So thank you so much for asking me to do this tonight, because I'm just so excited. Anyway, I will start. This is a picture of me and my sister growing up when we were, I don't know how old I was, 2 years old there. I'm in the green there. I don't know what my brother isn't there for. But anyway, I was raised in a dysfunctional home. Imagine that, right? I heard years ago that there's two kinds of homes. One, families. I was raised in a dysfunctional family. One, a family that knows it, and one, that a dysfunctional family that doesn't. So I could probably, we were probably all candidates. Anyway, I was skinny growing up. My mother always would say to me, oh dear, she dieted all the time. My mother would always say to me, oh dear, you'll never have to go on a diet. You'll never have to go on a diet. Well, she didn't know. I sure did years later. This is me when I was in fifth grade. Some of the food things that I remembered when I was a little girl, I remember we didn't have much money. So if we had food, I remember one time having ketchup left over on my plate, and my dad made me take a piece of bread and sop it up because we weren't wasting that ketchup. And I also remember when I was a little girl, like I said, we didn't have a lot of money, and I liked candy, of course. And I remembered I had a Raggedy Ann doll. And that Raggedy Ann doll had a candy heart in it that said, I love you. So after Valentine's Day, that candy heart was always in there because my mom sewed it in there. But I would sneak it out once in a while. I would open her up and eat that candy heart because that's all the candy we had around. And then when Valentine's Day came around again, those candy hearts would come out again, and I'd get one that said, I love you, and put it back in there. But like I said, my mom, I saw my mom dieting all the time, and she would always, you know, we order at a restaurant, and she wouldn't order much, and I could see myself years later doing this too. And then she would steal off of everybody else's plate because it wouldn't look like she was eating much. Anyway, I don't remember being heavy until I was about, when I was 15, I was in ninth grade, and that's the first time I remember weighing, and I weighed about 130 pounds, which was a good weight for me at that age. And I started dating a man, and I'm going to bring in some, I'm also recovering alcoholic and addict and in Al-Anon, and I just celebrated 30 years of sobriety in January. And my programs today kind of all blend together. It's just home to me. It's life to me. My programs with the good Lord has saved my life, changed my life, and is my life today. And I started dating this guy when I was 15 and he was 31. Well, he started buying alcohol for me. He started probably the drugs also, and also he would come and get me because I would know it was old enough to drive. So he would, I'm getting over this crud here, so excuse me a little bit. He would start driving me around and taking me out to eat all the time. So then no exercise, and I just got bigger and bigger. I remember graduating from high school. I was 165 pounds, and at that time, I had never been on a diet yet. And we know in recovery, yeah, means you're eligible too. Well, I ended up about 20 years old going to marry that man. And I started my first diet so I could be small enough to be in my wedding dress. And I have all kind of diets here that I listed. This is my bun girls that I worked with. I worked at a factory. We made Bun-O-Matic coffee pots. And those were, I say, bun dieters. And so we dieted. And I got down 125 pounds to be in my wedding dress there. And through the years, I just continued to diet, diet, diet like everybody else. A couple of years down the road, I got pregnant and had me a set of twins. But I still was on diets, all kind of diets. This is one of my groups, Tops. You guys probably remember Tops. That was Halloween. And then I have the diet group I was in, and then how skinny I got on each diet there. And I was on Weight Watchers probably 5 times, Tops 5 times, Herbalife. I sold Herbalife. I was on starvation diets. I did Weigh Down Workshop. I heard the leader say that she did that too. I did that 5 times, Weigh Down Workshop. I had a Christian counselor that helped me. Oh, yes, the alcohol and drugs. I didn't know it at the time, but they also was diet control there. That's me after I having a hangover there, hanging over the throne there, the stool. I didn't know it, but I used alcohol and drugs for a diet program because I drank Fuzzy Navels years down the road. When I came to Howe, I realized that, of course, being the sugar, I drank sweet drinks. And I drank Fuzzy Navels, and I would go out that night, and I wouldn't eat because, of course, I was going to drink. And then Fuzzy Navels always had me, got me the runs, so that was a good 2 pounds overnight. And then if I got sick, like here, not that I planned on getting sick, you see, but if I got sick, that was another 3 pounds, so that was a good 5 pounds overnight. Pretty good diet, wasn't it? And more bun dieters. I also, I don't know if you guys ever tried it before, but I was on a candy diet. All I ate is candy. And it worked, too, for a while. And all the time when I was on these diets, I knew I had all kind of clothes in my closets. I'm sure you guys could relate. This is one of my biggest clothes I had. That was before the diets stopped working. The diets used to work, see? But when I had those clothes on in the closet, I knew exactly what weight I needed to weigh to wear size 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. But the diets used to work for about, as I was writing some things down tonight, I realized they worked for about 20 years. I started dieting probably when I was 20 years old, and I realized that the diet stopped working when I was 40. I couldn't stay on a diet anymore. They worked if I could stay on one. I want to go back a little bit. I ended up marrying that guy, having the twins, divorcing the guy, went back to the bar, picked me up another alcoholic, didn't realize it. And in 1990, I got into treatment for codependency. And I was still thin most of the time at this time because the diets kept working. And I remember going, and then they started about 98, they stopped working. And I just got heavier and heavier and heavier. You know, there was always that number on the scale. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was dying, I could get on that scale quite a bit, especially when you'd go to Weight Watchers meetings. And before I'd go, and of course I'd wear, you know, the lightest clothes I could. I remember going to a meeting and wearing the lightest clothes, even in the depth of winter, and sometimes shorts. And then after the meeting, we'd run off to Taco Bell. And I was always weighing if I was on a diet. But then when I didn't get on a diet, or if I wasn't on a diet, I would not get on the scales and I would not weigh. And anyway, like I said, when I hit 40, I got into recovery in 1990. I stopped drinking and using, and my boyfriend at the time before that was using, and I remember him buying me some cocaine, you know, because he had a problem with it, but I didn't, you see. I could use it because I was using it to diet with, and that was okay. And I learned later, you know, there's no thing as a social user, and cocaine wasn't legal, and I don't think it was legal to be using for dieting either. But that was that sick thinking. Somebody said, we do this for the thinking. And I know the Brown book says that the food plan is for the fat downstairs, and the 12 steps is for the fat upstairs. Anyway, the diet stopped working. I remember going to an AA meeting once, and a guy was there and had been sober, and he went back out, and he came in, and he trying to get sober, and he said, I can't even stay sober past 11 o'clock in the morning. And I'm thinking, oh, that's me. I can't even stay on a diet past 11 o'clock. Every day I started the diet over and over again. And I didn't realize till I got to how it was the first bite. When I gave myself the permission to have the first bite, it was downhill. It was like, oh, I just as well go ahead and eat and we'll start over tomorrow. Anyway, I kept going up and up and up the scales, and I got up to 235 pounds. Like I said, the diet stopped working about 40, and I would cry. I'd get onto my knees and cry to God. You know, I was in recovery, had a good relationship with my higher power, which I choose to call God, and I just cry and cry and beg because I was miserable. I was miserable. I was 235 pounds sitting on the couch, eating chips and dip and being miserable. And the answer didn't come. It just didn't come yet. My knees were hurting. My knees ached and knocked and everything. And I'd wake my husband up at night moaning and groaning because I was so, and he said, what is wrong with you? And I said, I hurt because I knew my body, I'm 5'6", and my normal weight's 130 to 135. And I was 235. I was 100 pounds overweight. And I'd look in the mirror, you guys, and I knew there was thin body in there. I knew there was. Well, one day, it was on a Sunday, God spoke to me, and he said that I needed to go to this church where my friend was speaking. And my friend had cancer. And I went down to that. He said, she has something you need to know. She has something she wants to tell you. You need to hear. Well, I went, and she was a lay speaker that day, and she was glad to see me. It was out of town. She wasn't expecting me, but I didn't hear anything that she needed to tell me. I told her that I went for that, but that's what God told me. I didn't hear anything. I didn't go home with anything. The next morning, you guys, the next morning, and Diane, my friend, was dying of cancer. God spoke to me loud and clear, and he said, Valerie, Diane is powerless over her pain. Diane cannot do anything over her pain. Valerie, you are not powerless over your pain. You have power over your pain. He said, you must drink water, you must exercise, and you must eat right. And must is a pretty hard word from the good Lord. And so I started drinking water, very much so. I stopped drinking any kind of pop. I always drank diet pop, you know, along with my three pieces of pizza and Krispy Kreme donuts. I stopped drinking and I started drinking water, and I started exercising 2 miles a day, walking 2 miles a day around the lake. But I couldn't, that was in June of 2005. I could not get the eating right. I just could not get it right. And finally, I lost weight. I lost 5 pounds in June. I lost 5 pounds in July. And I remember my last binge. It was the last of July. and I was going to go to, I was helping my daughter move, and her boyfriend's father was a Krispy Kreme driver. He brought like 18 Krispy Kremes, and I think I ate those over the weekend, and I binged on other stuff, and I was miserable. And I remember coming home, it was a Monday, August 1st, and God had told me through a book to go to an AA meeting that night. I went to an AA meeting, and there was something there I'd never seen before. She was tall, she was thin, she was happy. She said she was in another program. Sure enough, it was Hal, and she invited me to go. And she got my number and everything, and the next day was August 2nd, and their meeting was August 3rd, my birthday. The next day, my friend made me this diet cake. It wasn't chocolate. It was angel food with a pink frosting, because I told her I was going to start this program how. I had been in early OA back in the early 90s just for a bit. Wasn't for me, like I said, and I left. So I went to my first meeting on my 47th birthday. I got there, you guys, and they had a step up. So she got presents and a balloon and a cactus. And somebody, there was this anniversary, and they brought her presents. It was a live meeting and a balloon and a rose. And it was like, it was my birthday. It was my birthday. And I knew we weren't going to be able to eat sugar, you know, in the fifth ingredient, but I didn't know anything about the measure and weighing. Good thing the girl that invited me didn't tell me. Because when I heard about them tools, I thought, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. Then I heard this still small voice remind me what a tool meant. It's something or someone used to get a job done. And I heard that still small voice said, Valerie, you've got over 100 pounds to get off. And these tools are going to help you do that. And immediately my thought changed. I got a sponsor that night. I started the program the next day. So August 4th of 2005 is my back-to-back absence date. I'm down around 105 pounds for my highest weight, 95 pounds in how. I was 4 days in the 8 days in the program, you guys, and God gave me a Bible scripture. I'm a Christian, and he speaks to me through the big book too. And it was Proverbs 11:1. A false measurement is an abomination to the Lord, but an accurate weight is his delight. His delight on my food scales and also my accurate weight on my weighing scales is his delight. And 235 pounds sitting on the couch miserable, I wasn't my delight, God's delight, or anybody else's delight either. So I have been doing this program now for 14 and a half years, one day at a time. I asked God when I got here, because it was home to me, why did it take so long? And he said very loud and clear, because you weren't ready. And I am ready. I'm living it one day at a time. I love it. It's my life today. I say what a gift it's been, because when I went home that night, I didn't take any material gifts with me, but I took this gift of this program, and God said, after 6.5 years of just getting heavier and heavier and the diet's not working, he said, dear, this is my gift to you. And like I said, what a gift it's been. And I can't say a good enough about it. And whenever I go out and about, the first year I brought 21 people with me, guys, just because the weight just fell off of me. How many stayed? None. Because... you know, Joyce Myers always says, if you want what somebody else has, are you willing to get it? And I am, and I'm still doing it one day at a time, and I still want it. And it's here for anybody that is willing to go to any lengths, and it works if you work. You work it. And half measures of bail is nothing. We stood at the turning point, and I like and it's just, it's wonderful. And I still go out there and people say to me, you know, something about my diet. I said, this isn't a diet. Diet's a 4-letter word. This is a way of life. This is my program. And I'm very, very grateful to God and the people in it. And I to have given me what I have today. And I will keep doing it one day at a time. And thank you again for letting me speak tonight. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Valerie. I want to thank you for allowing me to be your leader for this meeting tonight. I also want to thank all those who participated, especially our speaker, Valerie, who offered so much of herself. Thank you. May we please have the reading of Just for Today?
Hello, my name is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Just for today. I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problems at once. I can do something for one day that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in three ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anyone knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least two things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. During this half hour sometime, I will try to get a better perspective of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. Especially, I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me.
Thanks, yes. Mary. For those joining us here in person, I would like to ask for your help in putting away the equipment and bringing this room back to its original setup after we have concluded our closing prayer. Thank you for your help with this. We would also like to thank our skilled interpreters for helping us reach even more people who struggle with this disease. Our closing statement, to those who are still new to the program, we remind you that all that was said here today should safely remain here as we respect and cherish our tradition of anonymity. We also assure you that following the program will get your weight off or on. Abstinence will remove the cravings. Our way of life will remove compulsion and time and give you contentment in all areas of life. After a moment of meditation, will those who wish to please join and say the Serenity Prayer. Those attending virtually, please unmute yourselves, *6. Let's pray for those who are still suffering.
Indeed. Oh, here he comes.
God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I will
not
be done.
Keep coming back. It works when you work it and give a lot of love.
Woo! Thanks for coming.
Thanks,
everyone. Thanks, guys. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, all.